Reading from Srila Prabhupada's Shikshamrita. This is under the category of preaching in the West, and the subtopic is about not being the body. A letter from 1968. March. The evening twilight first appeared as a beautiful girl to attract the demons, but later on turned to be evening twilight. There is no reality in the material beauty. What you think as real, that is also unreal, because everything material transforms into matter at the ultimate stage. It is the spirit soul who is beautiful and not the matter. A letter from 1968, June. The example of Naradaji, that when he realized Krishna in his previous life, that life and the next life, there is no difference. Example of Naradaji, that when he realized in his previous life, that life, and the next life, there is no difference. The example is given sometimes in the coconut skin when it is dried up. The fruit within the covering is hard. And if the coconut is shaken, it is found that the coconut fruit is moving within. Because it has dried up and broken away from the inner walls of the coconut skin. So it has nothing to do with the outer skin, even though it appears that it is within that skin. Similarly, when one is purely in Krishna consciousness, it may appear that he is within the material existence, but actually he has nothing to do with it. He is dried up like the coconut fruit, and that process of drying up is forgetting all sense gratification and executing Krishna consciousness full time. So when one is purely in Krishna consciousness, his present life and future life are identical. Example, Prabhupada used this many times. If you shake the coconut, you'll see that it's detached inside when it's fully dried up. So in the same way, he says, when the living entity becomes factually realized in Krishna consciousness in this life, then he is already liberated without having to wait for the next life. Recently, I just had a conversation with one devotee. We were discussing this point in relationship to devotees' oftentimes stated expression within this devotee's life. I don't want to say she or he, but not to allude who the devotee is. This devotee would oftentimes say, "I just want to go back to Godhead. I just want to go back to Godhead." And every time the devotee was experiencing some dip, "I just want to go back to Godhead." So then the devotee was asking me about going back to Godhead. And I tried to explain that oftentimes, although going back to Godhead is definitely, it should be an aspiration for every devotee to go back to Godhead. But sometimes it can be hankered for with improper motivation, that I just want to get out of here. I just want relief. I just don't want to suffer anymore. I just want to go back to Godhead. The devotee was asking about that specific aspiration. And in answer to the question, I tried to present it as Prabhupada is presenting here. But actually, going back to Godhead doesn't mean one has to wait to give up the body and go back to Godhead, which of course may not necessarily be the destination even when we give up the body. And going back to Godhead, as Prabhupada is describing in this example here, means to be fully engaged in Krishna's service. Because one who's fully engaged in Krishna's service is iha yasya hare dasya kamana manasa gira nikala vapyavasta so jivan mukta so uchite, that anyone who's engaged in devotional service fully with body, mind, and words is a liberated soul even while within the material body. So a better aspiration is, how can it be fully engaged in Krishna's service? Because anyone who's fully engaged in Krishna's service has the opportunity to not have to wait to give up the body, and with the hope that I'll be fully engaged in Krishna's service when I give up the body, but it may not necessarily be a fact, especially for those who just simply think, if I want to get out of here, they may get out of here, which means they may get out of the present physical body. But liberation is described in the Bhagavatam. Real liberation means the liberation of both the gross body and the subtle body. Liberation is not, I want to get out of this body. Real liberation means the subtle body, also becoming free from the subtle body, which includes the mind, intelligence, and false ego. So the best way to become liberated is to, rather than detach oneself from the physical body, is to fully engage oneself 100% mind, body, and words. Mind, always thinking of Krishna, body, utilizing the body and engaged in service to Krishna, and the words, of always speaking about Krishna and chanting Krishna's name. This going back home, back to Godhead, can be prepared for now in this life. Because to go back home, back to Godhead, means I have to realize my relationship with Krishna. And when Sanatana Goswami asked Lord Chaitanya, "Who am I?" Lord Chaitanya's first response was, "Jivera Surupoya Krishna Nichidas," that you are an eternal servant of Krishna. And therefore, to realize our relationship with Krishna begins in this life. Yes, first I have to become engaged wholeheartedly, 100%, my mind, body, and words in Krishna's service. And then, having been fully engaged myself in Krishna's service in this way, then gradually what happens is that by purification of heart, and then anartha nivritti, when the anarthas become cleared from the heart, and after the stage of anartha nivritti, then gradually one begins to experience from faith, nishtha, and then attachment. And then one becomes too attached to serving Krishna in a particular way. And then when one becomes attached to serving Krishna in a particular way, then he thinks about a devotee in Vrindavan who serves Krishna in the way that he would like to serve Krishna, and he meditates on that devotee's service. And in this way, he's already fully engaged in Krishna's service, even while within this body. Internally, he engages in service to Krishna, but externally, as Rupa Goswami explains, externally he always is a sadhaka. He's always strictly following the regulative principles, as we see in the examples of our acharyas, our predecessor acharyas, the six Goswamis, Raghunath Das Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Rupa Sanatan Goswami. They taught how they were always externally engaged in thinking about Krishna, service to Krishna, performing austerities, giving up their identification with the gross physical body. But internally, within their heart, they were always meditating on their service to Krishna. So, therefore, the point that Prabhupada is making, his Narada Muni, that life and his next life, they were the same. He says the example of Naradaji, that when he realized Krishna in his previous life, that life and the next life, there is no difference. Is that life, he became fully absorbed in service to Krishna. He was hearing the Bhakti Vedantas. He was hearing their katha, Hari katha, continuously, which is like a continuous flow of nectar. And by hearing that Hari katha and by taking the remnants of foodstuffs from the Bhakti Vedantas and by engaging in menial service to the Bhakti Vedantas, he was fully engaged. So that life and next life, the same. And Prabhupada says, actually, that's what it means, the time of death. It's like, he says, it's like lightning and illumination. They take place simultaneously. For the devotee, when he gives up his body, because his mind, his words, his thoughts, they're always absorbed in Krishna, to him, leaving this world is simply a continuation of everything that he's already been meditating and doing on the spiritual platform in this world. So, simply to say, I want to get out of here, I want to go back to Godhead, is not really dealing. It's not dealing with our life in this world. We have to confront the issues, the problems of this world, and look for a positive solution now, rather than just saying, and at the risk of, well, if I always just say I want to go back to God every time I'm suffering, I'll go back to God, hopefully. But if we're avoiding the going back to Godhead in this life, which means engaging body, mind, and words in Krishna's service, then we can't expect to go back to Godhead. It's just not the process. It's just all of a sudden we go back to Godhead. Therefore, very fortunate is that person who in this life comes in contact with pure devotional service, comes in contact with a devotee of the Lord and finds the means to engage in devotional service in this life so that he can properly utilize this human form of life without unnecessarily wasting it, and therefore he can be fully prepared for this life and next life to be the same. This is going back to Godhead. This is a mature approach for going back to God. Anyways, I explained this to the particular devotee in this way, but probably a little bit more detail because there were a lot of questions also. And fortunately, I think the devotee understood. And now I don't hear all the time, I want to go back to God. So that's what Prabhupada is saying here, 1968, June, to a letter to Upendra, June 1st, yesterday, 1968, Prabhupada Shikshamrita. We'll read from Srimad Bhagavatam. It won't be a long class this morning. I have an appointment this morning, but there'll be something. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 12, Text 41. Narada Uvacha Nunam Sunite Pati Devataya Tapa Prabhavasya Sutasya Tam Gatim Drishtva Abhyupayan Api Vedavadina Na Eva Arigantum Prabhavanti Kim Nirpa Narada Uvacha Nunam sunite pati devatayas Tapa prabhavasya sutasya tam gatim Tapa prabhavasya sutasya tam gatim Jishtva bhupayan api veda vadino Drishtva bhupayan abhiveda vadino Naivadi gantum prabhavanti kim nripa Naivadi gantum prabhavanti kim nripa Narada uvacha Nunam sunite pati devatayas Tapa prabhavasya sutasya tam gatim Jishtva bhupayan api veda vadino Naivadi gantum prabhavanti kim nripa Narada uvacha Nunam sunite pati devatayas Tapa prabhavasya sutasya tam gatim Drishtva bhupayan api veda vadino naivadigantum prabhavanti kim nipa. Narada uvacha. Narada said, nunam, certainly, sunite, of suniti, patidevataya, very much attached to her husband, tapa prabhavasya, by the influence of austerity, sutasya, of the sun, tam, that, gatim, position, drishtva, observing, abhyupayan, the means, api, although, vedavadina, strict followers of the Vedic principles, or the so-called Vedantists, na, never, eva, certainly, adigantum, to attain, prabhavanti, are eligible, kim, what to speak of, nipa, ordinary kings. The great sage Narada said, simply by the influence of his spiritual advancement and powerful austerity, Dhruva Maharaj, the son of Suniti, who was devoted to her husband, acquired an exalted position not possible to attain even for the so-called Vedantists or strict followers of the Vedic principles, not to speak of ordinary human beings. Repeat after me. The great sage Narada said, simply by the influence of his spiritual advancement and powerful austerity, Dhruva Maharaj, the son of Suniti, who was devoted to her husband, acquired an exalted position not possible to attain even for the so-called Vedantists or strict followers of the Vedic principles, not to speak of ordinary human beings. Purport. In this verse, the word Vedavadina is very significant. Generally, a person who strictly follows the Vedic principles is called Vedavadi. There are also so-called Vedantists who advertise themselves as followers of Vedanta philosophy, but who misinterpret Vedanta. The expression Vedavadarata is also found in the Bhagavad Gita, referring to persons who are attached to the Vedas without understanding the purport of the Vedas. Such persons may go on talking about the Vedas or may execute austerities in their own way, but it is not possible for them to attain to such an exalted position as Dhruva Maharaj. As far as ordinary kings are concerned, it is not at all possible. The specific mention of kings is significant because formerly kings were also Rajarshis, for the kings were as good as great sages. Dhruva Maharaj was a king, and at the same time, he was as learned as a great sage. But without devotional service, neither a great king, a kshatriya, nor a great Brahmin, strictly adhering to the Vedic principles, can be elevated to the exalted position attained by Dhruva Maharaj. Om Gyanatim Arandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshu Umminitam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Ukam Kuroti Vachalam Pangum Langayati Garim Yatkipa Tamaham Bande Shri Gurandina Taranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Nirvashesha Samyavari Paschachadi Satarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaurav Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So today is the first of three verses, which Srila Prabhupada referred to yesterday in his commentary. Which Maitreya Rishi referred to. He said that Narada Muni went to the sacrificial arena of the Prachetas and very happily chanted the following three verses. And then yesterday's topic was about why Narada Muni was so happy because of the achievements which were made by Dhruva Maharaj. So today is the first of the three verses where Narada Muni is speaking about Dhruva Maharaj's exalted position. And he's saying that by the influence of his spiritual advancement and his powerful austerities, Dhruva Maharaj acquired exalted position not possible to attain. And many persons are referred to, even if one's a even for the so-called Vedantists or those who are strict followers of the Vedic principles, and not to speak of ordinary human beings, although the word in the verse is nipa, which means ordinary kings. So here it should be clearly understood that it's not simply by following all the rules and regulations of the Vedas that one can achieve what Dhruva Maharaj achieved. Prabhupada quotes in the purport, the verse refers to the verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Yami Mam Pushpatam Vacham Veda Vada Ratap. What is that verse? No, that's not the verse. What is it? Oh, I have it right here. Yami mam pushpatam vacham bravavanchya paschita veda vada rata parta nadyat astati vadana. That men of small knowledge are very much attracted to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various types of sacrifices for the elevation to heavenly planets, result in good birth, power, and so forth. Being attached to sense gratification and opulent life, they think there's nothing more than this. So, Prabhupada will many times quote this verse because I remember many years ago, especially around the time when Prabhupada came to America and shortly thereafter, it is not the, I think, the many yogi sannyasis had come already prior to Prabhupada. And I remember the Vedanta Society. It was around for a long time in America. And they had, I remember even way back, I think it was in the 70s, the Swami Sarvagadananda, I think his name. Huh? Right up the street. Still there? Still alive? Huh? Oh, the institute is there. Yeah, I think it must have left by now. And I specifically remember him because it was probably late 70s, maybe early 80s. Early 80s, could have been early 80s. And we did a program. We were invited to a program with Swami Sarvagadananda. He was the I think he was the head of the Vedanta Society. And Agrani, my godbrother at that time, he was asked to speak. And Swami, there were a few speakers. Swami Sarvagadananda was before him, and then Agrani spoke. I was just telling this to PR just the other day. That's why it's in my mind. I was remembering it, that Swami Sarvagadananda spoke, and he gave a completely, totally impersonal presentation of Vedanta. I mean, every common expression in the book, it's all one, it's void, you know, ultimately, you know, things the Prabhupada talks about in the Bhagavad Gita, that it's not Krishna that you personally surrender to, but it's, you know, it's not Krishna the person. But the whole lecture was like, you know, was steeped with impersonalist conceptions. And although he quoted many verses, gave evidence from the Vedas, the conclusion was obviously devoid of bhakti. And therefore, although one may be a strict follower of the Vedas, and Prabhupada is making the point right here, he said that, where is it? He said, without devotional service, without bhakti, neither a great king, a kshatriya, great Brahmin strictly adhering to Vedic principles, they can't be elevated to this exalted position that was attained by Dhruva Maharaj. So, anyways, to make a long story short, the Gaurini spoke afterwards and completely exposed him. I mean, he just pulled out all stops. It was just like, we're quoting so many verses from Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. Yeah, I was really proud of my godbrother at this particular, you know, event. Because I watched Swami Sarvagadananda. Karate didn't have the opportunity to see his expression on his face, but I did because I was sitting. And he was like so restless, you know, and indignant and embarrassed. And he didn't let up. Karate just didn't let up. He just like, but he wasn't attacking him. He was attacking impersonal philosophy, which was, you know, the way Prabhupada said you should do it. Because Prabhupada, also many times when Prabhupada was put in a situation like that, you know, like when people would come to Prabhupada and they say, oh, can you tell me what about Yogi Bhajan? And Prabhupada would say, what's his philosophy? A lot of times they didn't even know what his philosophy was. But then he would force them to speak of what's their philosophy. And as soon as he would start speaking the philosophy, the Prabhupada would rip it apart. But he wouldn't say anything about Yogi Bhajan. He wouldn't say anything about the person. He's very expert, you know. And that he taught us, actually, that we should be respectful. But when there's a misrepresentation of philosophy, and he speaks about this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we should be prepared to rip it apart. So this is exactly what he did. He just took all the shlokas and he explained how, you know, that these impersonal conceptions which are given in the scriptures, where Krishna apparently has no qualities, it's understood that he has no material qualities, but he has spiritual qualities. And then he begins to describe what is the characteristic of spiritual qualities. He said, but the impersonal conception is to say that the Supreme has no qualities. He's formless. He has no senses. But, you know, it has no material form, but he has a completely spiritual form. And he just one after the next. And Swami Sarvagadananda, like, just this. I felt like, you know, I was looking at him, felt like he said had his pants pulled down in public, you know. So exposed. And then after the lecture, you know, everybody there was a large group of people. They just all thronged to Agrani. And so Swami Sarvagadananda was just like just another face in the crowd. So without bhakti, Bhagavat Bhakti Hinasya Jati Shastram Japastapa Pranasiva Dehana Mandanam Lokaranjanam. Even if one is expert in chanting all kinds of Vedic mantras, Even if one performs all kinds of severe austerities, even if one takes birth in a great family or nation, or even if one is knowledge of the scriptures. If a person who's devoid of bhakti, then we always quote this verse, they're all like compared to be like ornaments on a dead body. They simply serve the concocted pleasures of the general populace. What is the value of such ornaments on a dead body? And in the same way, what is the value of all the knowledge of the Vedas if one doesn't know the purpose behind them? Krishna says that right in the Bhagavad Gita. All the purposes of the small pond can be served by the great reservoirs of water. Similarly, all the purpose of the Vedas can be served by one who knows all the purpose behind the Vedas. So what is the purpose behind the Vedas? Krishna says, Vedaischa Sayavaraham Eva Veda Vedantikud Veda Veda Eva Chaham. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedanta and a knower of the Vedas. So what is the value of all of these, even Prabhupada says, expert Vedantists, expert in the knowledge of the Vedanta. What is the value of those who have expert knowledge of the Vedanta if it doesn't culminate in devotional service to Krishna? Or just like I read the other night, Prabhupada said the same thing. I'm sure you all heard it, but I love it. I'll read it again because Prabhupada is saying this point about for those who chant for Krishna's love. I pretty much memorize it. It says, one who knows Krishna and who chants in ecstasy for Krishna's love, then what good? Well, all your, you know, what good will your Vedanta do? Something like that. He said, no, I can't remember it exactly, so I better look it up. I don't want to misquote it because it's so Prabhupada. It's right here. Yes, he says right here. Krishnaut kirtana gana natana paro. This is the art. One does not require to become a Vedantist. Simply if one chants Krishna's name, holy name, and in ecstasy dances, he's more than a Vedantist. Actually, Vedanti means one who knows the ultimate knowledge, Veda. Veda means knowledge. And Anta means ultimate, Vedanta. Then what is the ultimate knowledge? Krishna. Vedaischa sayavar aham eva vejam. That is ultimate knowledge. So one who has understood Krishna and Krishna's love, he's dancing. Then what more Vedanta can do for him? It's Prabhupada. This is exactly what the same point that he's making here. One who's chanting for Krishna's love, he's dancing. He's in ecstasy. What more Vedanta can do for him? He doesn't need it. He knows Vedanta, but he's understood. He already knows Vedanta. He's understood the goal of Vedanta. All the Vedas, Krishna is to be known. Sarva Vedishu Drishyate. What is it? Iti Sodasakam Nanam Kalikam Asa Nasanam Nata Parotaya Paryad. Sarva Vedishu Drishyate. These 16 words of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is the means for becoming completely purified in the age of Kali. Right? After searching through all the Vedic literatures, one will not find a method of religion more sublime than chanting Krishna's name. Sarva Vedishu Drishyate. That's what the goal. Study all your Vedas. And what do you have to come to the conclusion after studying all your Vedas? Krishna's name. Why? Because Krishna and his name are non-different. If we want to have establish a relationship with Krishna, we establish a relationship with Krishna's name. It's non-different. One gets. And just the Dhruva Maharaj, what happened? He was initiated into a Vaishnava mantra. Narada Muni gave him Vaishnava mantra. He sent it, told him, you chant, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And by chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and of course he performed austerities, very severe austerities, but not without the chanting of Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. What is the value of all the austerities without the chanting of Om Namo Bhagavate? He chanted, performed the austerities and chanted Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And then meditated upon the Lord, the form of the Lord within the heart while chanting this mantra. And he achieved the destination of that mantra, Vishnu Loka. That was his perfection from chanting that mantra. So Sarva Veda Shudrishate. If you study all the Vedas, these 16 words, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, everything is there. And therefore, Dhruva Maharaj was more than a Vedantist. He achieved a perfection even greater than all the Vedantists, as Prabhupada goes on to explain here, or the verse goes on to explain, exalted position. He acquired an exalted position not possible to attain even for the so-called Vedantists or the strict followers of the Vedic principles, not to speak of ordinary human beings. Strict followers of Vedic principles, because they may study the Vedas, but they may not actually know the goal of the Vedas. And therefore, we quoted that verse from Bhagavad Gita, which Prabhupada referred to also in the commentary, Veda Vada Rita Partha. They think that the purpose of performing Vedic rituals and sacrifices is to attain heavenly planets, to drink soma ras, you know, to go to the heavenly planets and achieve heavenly pleasures. Sometimes even people think that, and in fact, Prabhupada talks about it right in the commentary of that purport. He says, even the followers of Chaturmasya, actually the followers of Chaturmasya, it can be performed, yes, for coming closer to Krishna, but others who follow Chaturmasya simply to achieve, to go to the heavenly planets for soma ras. I think it's right in the commentary. Oops, oh, it came back. Thank you. Let me read. It's right here. In the Karmakanda section of Vedas, it is said, Apama somam amrita abuma akshayam ha vai chaturmasya yagya sukritam bhavati. In other words, those who perform the four-month penances become eligible to drink the somaras beverages to become immortal and happy forever. Even on this earth, some are very eager to have somaras to become strong and fit to enjoy sense gratification. Such persons have no faith in liberation from material bondage, and they are very much attached to the pompous ceremonies of Vedic sacrifices. They are generally sensual, and they do not want anything other than heavenly pleasures of life. So Prabhupada is talking about the Veda Vadaratas, those who are strict followers of the Vedas, but they want to follow the sacrifice of the Vedas simply to get some heavenly pleasures. And then the next verse, what does Krishna say? Bogai Shvaya Prasaktanam, Taya Prahita Chaitasam, Vyavasayatmaka Buddhi Samadhana Vidyate. Then the minds of those who are too much attached to sense enjoyment and opulent life and are bewildered by such things, what happens? There can be no resolute determination for bhakti. No resolute determination. Even though they know the Vedas, even though they're strict followers, even though they perform all kinds of Vedic sacrifices, and that's why Krishna himself tells to Arjuna, he says, even if you follow all kinds of Vedic sacrifices, perform austerities, not by studying the Vedas, none of these things give you the ability to see my form as you're seeing me in front of you today. He says, only by undivided devotional service can it be understood as I am standing by before you. Only then can you enter into the mysteries of understanding me. So, in the minds of those who are too much attached to sense gratification, opulent life, too much attached to the enjoyment, and therefore they study the Vedas with that, because the Vedas are like, you know, everything is there in the Vedas. Everything is there. So for those who are still attached and they can follow the Vedic process, and by following the Vedic process, then gradually they can cultivate, they can get the fulfillment of their desires and cultivate some detachment. But for one who gets the opportunity to come in contact with bhakti, And that was the whole purpose behind Narada Muni's instructions to Vyasadeva. After he compiled all the Vedic literatures, Vyasadeva still felt very despondent. And Narada Muni, being the expert spiritual master, could take a pulse and immediately understand the symptom of the disease. He immediately understood what was Vyasa's despondency. He said he had compiled all the Vedic literatures, compiled the Vedanta Sutra, Mahabharata, everything, but he failed to glorify the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore he said, people will take everything that you have, especially in this age, they'll read it and they'll misinterpret it to think that, you know, these are the goals in of themselves. All these different types of Vedic sacrifice, they'll think these are the goals in of themselves. And you've actually performed an injustice. An injustice to them. Because they won't know what is the actual goal. Give them the goal. Give them the goal. Right? Give your commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Give the Srimad Bhagavatam and give them the goal. Because even if they renounce everything and go for the goal, and even if they fall from that position, they won't lose anything. That's exactly what he told. He told Vyasadeva. He says, my dear Vyasa, even though a devotee of Lord Krishna, he may fall down sometimes, engage in fruitive activity again, he certainly doesn't become a fruitive worker, because anyone who is engaged in devotional service to the Lord, what is that verse? My dear Vyasa, even though a devotee of Lord Krishna sometimes falls down somehow or other, simply doesn't become a fruitive worker again, because anyone who has once tasted the nectar of the lotus feet of Krishna will never be able to remember anything, will never be able to remember or forget that ecstasy. And therefore, in the previous verse, he says, one who forsakes his occupation to engage in a devotional service of the Lord, he may fall down in an immature stage, but there's never any danger for being unsuccessful. On the other hand, a non-devotee, even though perfectly engaged in all his occupational duties, he doesn't gain anything. So Narada Muni explained the same thing to Vyas. He said, you've bewildered them. They'll take all of these different concessions given in the Vedas and think they're the goal. Give them the goal. Spell it out. Just give it to them. Devotional service, beginning, middle, end. Srimad Bhagavatam. Beginning, middle, and end. It's all glorification of devotional service. And anyone who becomes attracted to the Lord and forsakes all his other obligations and duties to engage in Krishna's service, he'll never be the loser. He'll always be the gainer. Because even if one falls from that position, he'll never be able to forget the ecstasy of devotional service. And that's Narada Muni's points to Vyasadeva. So, therefore, this point here in relationship to this verse is that Dhruva Maharaj, because he received instruction from Narada Muni, he received a mantra from Narada Muni, he very determinedly followed the instructions of Narada Muni, chanting that mantra, and strictly performing austerities simultaneously, he achieved the destination that even the strict followers of the Vedantists, of the Vedas, they cannot achieve. That even the great kings or ordinary human beings, they cannot achieve it. Only by devotional service can this destination be achieved. And therefore, especially in this age, the Lord is so kind that he's made devotional service so easily accessible by his name. And that is, and I was just reading before, actually I was going to read, but I don't have time. In Harinam Chintamani, there's a very nice description of one has to be careful to not equate the chanting of Hare Krishna to be the pious activities of the Vedas. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur very clearly describes, you know, the differences between pious activities of the Vedas and the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. And one should never think that the chanting is equal to that. Although one may perform pious activities, one may perform all the rules and regulations of the Vedas, still it should be understood that the chanting of Hare Krishna is is supposed to be considered to be beyond that. In fact, there's that verse in the third canto of the Bhagavatam. Oh, how glorious are those whose tongue is decorated with your holy name. I think it was spoken by Devahuti. She says to Lord Kapila, she says that anyone whose tongue is decorated with your holy name, it's understood they've already performed all Vedic sacrifices in their previous life. They visited all the sacred places of pilgrimage in previous life and have achieved all the achievements of the Aryan civilization already in the previous life. It's already been accomplished. Why? Because their tongue is always decorated with your holy name. So this is the superiority of bhakti. This is the superiority of devotional service and chanting of the holy name of the Lord. And this is, of course, what Srila Prabhupada emphasizes throughout the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam in his own commentaries and by giving the commentaries of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur and other Vaishnava Acharyas, is the emphasis that bhakti, anyone who gets an opportunity to come in contact with bhakti in this life, is so fortunate. And therefore, he should simply pursue and not have to worry about all the other types of Vedic rituals. It was Prabhupada quotes Madhavendra Puri in the Bhagavad Gita, who offers this in his prayer. He says, please forgive me, O Vedic rituals. Now, I cannot perform all of your rituals like I did before. He says, he even says, oh, daily bath. But I think it means, don't misunderstand that we renounce our daily bath. It means he's specifically referring to all the rituals of the Vedas. And he said, I cannot perform all these rituals because now that I've understood Krishna and I've experienced Krishna, I think, and I simply chant Krishna's name, I think this is sufficient for me. Forgive me. I no longer feel obliged to all of your recommendations. I think this is sufficient. Madhavendra Prabhupada quotes that verse in the Bhagavad Gita. So, it's sufficient for all of us. And therefore, anyone who takes the holy name, dedicates their life to the holy name, chants the holy name, serves the holy name, and aspires to become free from all offenses in the chanting of the holy name, then he can achieve the same destination, exalted destination, even greater, if that is his desire, than Dhruva Maharaj achieved. Yeah. And therefore, Narada Muni is here in this verse speaking to the Prachetas and glorifying Dhruva Maharaj in this way that, yes, he made it. He made it. Look what he accomplished. Simply because he dedicated himself to the chanting of this mantra and performed all these austerities. That is, I'd say, the essence of this verse in Srimad Bhagavatam. And if you want to read, I don't know, Harinam Chintamani, anyways, it's a very good chapter, if you have time, about not equating the chanting of the holy name of the Lord to the rituals of the Vedas. Any questions? Okay. Thank you. I will go. Hare Krishna.